and Chris, and this is my Writing Table podcast, where we talk to authors and other creatives about the writing world and what it takes to create the books that we love to read. Ready? Pull up a chair and let's begin. Heather Fries is the author of the novel, The Baddest Girl on the Planet, winner of the Lee Smith Novel Prize. She's published numerous short stories, essays, and the occasional poem. Her work has appeared in Michigan Quarterly Review, the Los Angeles Review, Front Porch, the Barely South Review, Switchback, and elsewhere, earning notable mention in the Pushcart Prize Anthology and Best American Essays. Heather received her MFA from West Virginia University and has a master's degree from Ohio University. Coastal North Carolina is her longtime love and source of inspiration. Her writing deeply influenced by the wild magic and history of the Outer Banks. A native Ohioan, she currently writes, edits, and wrangles three small children in Raleigh, North Carolina. Welcome, Heather.
Hi, thank you so much.
I have a very important question after looking at your education, because you have an MFA and another master's degree from Ohio University. You knew you were a writer when?
Oh, goodness. I think on some level, I knew when I was a child. And then I sort of thought that it wasn't something I could pursue for real, you know? And so I kind of shoved it away. I just think I knew since I was about six. I wrote a poem about a butterfly, and then I had a little strawberry shortcake journal that I would write in, and I was always, always reading and making up stories. So I think it's just always been part of me.
You have written short stories and essays up until now. So how did that process change?
Very different. This is my second published novel, but it's actually the first one that I wrote. So I published another novel. My debut came out in 2021, but this was the first novel that I wrote. It's been sitting in a metaphorical desk drawer for a longer time. So I published sort of the follow-up to this book first. I wrote this book and I put it away. And then I wrote Baddest Girl on the Planet, and I got it done and revised and sent out, and it got published. In the meantime, The Saddest Girl on the Beach, which is releasing right now, was still sitting there in a desk drawer. So this was actually the first novel that I wrote. Your question? Yeah, it was very different from writing essays and short stories, which I had just done up until that point. I did sort of a good bit of planning for this book. I figured out the structure that I wanted to do. I laid it out. So I knew I was getting into a novel. Like, I knew I was getting into a novel length project, right? And I sort of structured it in my head like that. It was a very different process. The pacing is very different from in a short story. And you just have to keep the long view in mind at all times, I think, which is tricky. And it's tricky to workshop it sometimes, because especially as you get into the middle and the end of the book, it can be really difficult to hand a person who's never read the beginning part that chunk. So that was trickier. But then also a lot of things changed. Like, I went into it thinking I was going to do multiple first person perspectives, and that did not shake out. So a lot of things did change, but I did sort of enter into the project knowing that this was going to be a book length piece of work.
Let's talk about the setting, the Outer Banks of the Carolinas. Mm-hmm. I mean, many of us are familiar with what we've seen in films like Knights and Rodanthe, Message in a Bottle, where the setting was as much of a character as the people. Why did you choose it?
Yes. So yeah, absolutely. The setting is as much as much of a character as the people in my novels. I chose it for multiple reasons. The primary reason being that, like, it's just about my most favorite place in the world. I just love it there. I grew up in Ohio, and we would just go camp on the Outer Banks in Frisco at the National Seashore Campground every summer, a lot like my character in this book. And I just fell in love with the area. It's such a special place. If you haven't been there and you are just sort of looking at, the Nicholas Sparks movies and stuff.
I'm almost terrified to go there.
It's a wild place. It's wild. The current's there because of the way it's positioned. You have the Labrador Current coming up down from the Arctic, right? And then you have the Gulf Stream coming up from the south, and they collide. There's like two big rivers under the ocean, and they collide right off the Outer Banks there. So the currents are wild. The weather, it's a barrier island. So My books are set on Hatteras Island, which is a bit further south than, there's Northern Outer Banks that are a little mm-hmm. bit more like bigger towns. So the Northern Outer Banks are like there's more stuff going on there. Like they're hospitals and grocery stores and stuff. But
you chose the ones that are the smaller towns.
Smaller towns, a little more isolated. You have to cross the big bridge across the Oregon Inlet to get down there. So it's a lot more isolated. And so it was just this place where we would go and we would get away. And I always felt like I could be anyone I wanted to be when I was there because nobody knew me. You know? So I could be braver than I was, and I could be more interesting. I could be like whoever I wanted to be. And so that, along with it is this sort of stunning beauty with the sea oats and the ocean and the sunsets. It's just gorgeous. But also I was drawn to the stories of the place. Like there are all these little newspapers or little magazines in all the stores and restaurants, and they would have sort of legends and history. And so when I was a kid, I would just like devour those. And so I just read everything about the history of the area and of the island. And there's a lot there. So that has the tallest lighthouse in America. And it has, down on Ocracoke, which is just a little further south than Hatteras, there's where Blackbeard the pirate was. And there were submarines sunk during World War II. It was called Torpedo Junction. So you have the wild horses.
So have you seen the wild horses?
I think I have, but they're up north. They're not in Rodanthe, where they
were. Good to know.
Yeah. So they're up north and they're down south on Ocracoke, and they're penned up on Ocracoke now, but I have definitely seen them. I wrote articles about some of the wild horse companies. They're always really fun to write.
Well, tell us about the saddest girl on the beach. Why is she so sad?
Why is she so sad? Poor Charlotte. So Charlotte is sad because she's there on the beach because her father has just passed away. So Charlotte's 19, her father has just died, and she's been encouraged to sort of go on off to college and get along with her life, which she does, and then sort of tries to shove her grieving down, and not deal with it in a way. And then this is all sort of takes place before the story starts. So I'm giving you the backstory of why she's that. Charlotte decides to come down to the Outer Banks, where her best friend Evie lives with her parents. Her parents own an inn set on the Pimlico Sound. And Evie, who is also 19, like Charlotte, has just found out that she's pregnant. So she is kind of in need of some support. Charlotte is not in a good headspace. And so this is where the story starts. And that's why she's so sad. She's trying to figure out both sort of how to deal with her grief and who she is now at this sort of dividing line before and after her father's death.
Did you identify with either of these characters?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm definitely more Charlotte. I did start this book in the wake of my own father's death.
Sorry.
Thank you. It's been almost 20 years now. A lot like Charlotte, I first started writing unrelated stuff to not deal with it, sort of. Mm-hmm. Like I would writing these sort of really almost ridiculous pieces, stuff that was not related at all. And then it just came to a point where it was so consuming, I just had to write about it. And so being in that sort of grieving space made me want to write about grief, but at the same time, I needed to find a way to make it more interesting. So I thought to myself, what would have happened if I had been 19 instead of in my late 20s? I would have dealt with it much worse, right? It was bad enough at that point in my life. And then what would have happened if I had just up and left and went somewhere else? It's sort of what we dream about doing almost. Let's just run away to the beach and sit on the beach and watch the water and make everything go away. So I sort of started thinking what would happen, if I had done this, if I had run away, and what would have happened if the person I was going to stay with was in a completely different mindset, dealing with a completely different set of problems. And those two problems are going to be at odds with each other. And how are these two friends going to deal with that? And how are they going to support each other or not? And what else is Charlotte going to do to deal with her grief? So that's sort of what set off the story for me.
I don't want to say closure because I don't think we ever get closure when we lose people, but did you feel different about your dad after you wrote this book?
I will say this. I wrote the book, I drafted it, and then somewhere in the middle, I backed away from dealing with a lot of the conflict and the tension in the story, and I backed away from developing Charlotte through her grief to the other side. So I knew there was a lot of work left to do on it, and I just couldn't do it at the time. I wrote it and I was like, well, that's drafted. Let's put it away now. And I thought, I'm going to write some short stories. I'm not writing another novel. It's too hard. It's too long. And so I just put it away. And then life, you know, took hold and rolled on. And then about 3 years ago, I sort of ended up feeling like I didn't want to give up on it. And at that point, I felt like I finally had enough sort of closure and distance on my personal link to the story that I could look at the book with an artistic eye, and I could look at the book in terms of plot and tension, and I could look at it as, okay, what do I need to do to shape this to make it a viable story, as opposed to, how am I going to write through my dad's death?
Right. A little more objective.
I needed that time to get the sense of objectivity, which I just didn't have. And I would go back to it over the years, like open it up and try to work on it. And I'd just be like, at some point I would just be like, nope.
Not yet. Too soon.
Revised it. I felt differently. That's almost when I felt the closure, after I realized I was at the point where I had gotten enough sense of closure and objectivity that I could look back at it in a different light.
Cool. A little bird tells me that Mike Tyson has a role in this book. Are we talking about the fighter?
That is him. That's him. That's the one. He's much more of a character in The Baddest Girl on the Planet, but he does get his mentions here because the small town that Charlotte is from in Ohio is the site of Mike Tyson's training camp where Don King lives. She sort of grew up in that small town and it was like no big deal to her, because that's just, he was just part of the scenery there.
Don King is the scenery would be very interesting.
Well, Evie, Charlotte's friend who visits her in The Baddest Girl on the Planet, takes a much different view on Mike Tyson, and he has a much bigger impact on her life. But he does briefly appear in this book.
Are you a boxing fan?
No, not at all. It was just a random occurrence. A friend of mine was telling me a story about how she grew up in this small town where Don King had a training camp, and she was just like, oh yeah, Mike Tyson used to watch us do cartwheels.
What in the world? Yeah, we have to hang on to those little nuggets for our own stories. I tell my friends often, anything you say can and is very likely to end up in a book. I won't identify you. It will be fictional, but just know it might inspire something.
Yeah, and you never know. It's always the most random things. The most random like phrasing will sometimes like click in my head and I'm like, ooh, can I use that?
But those end up being the gems. You know, those are like those. Gems. Yeah.
Right. Those are like the little flashpoints of inspiration.
You got your MFA. A lot of us don't get our MFAs. I have a master's, but it's in communications. What's a lesson that you took from that you think, I don't know that I'd be the writer today if not for this?
Right. I think in a lot of ways, I can think of sort of how I wouldn't be the writer that I am without sort of these lessons or input on sort of the usual stuff, like, you know, like place or point of view or setting or, you know, things like that. But I think almost more than that, it's sort of the depth of getting into reading other work and understanding what it is doing on these sort of deeper levels, and how a piece of writing can be manifesting these things underneath the surface, and then trying to apply that to your own work. That's probably an important aspect. Like, I've never read in the same way after doing these programs as I did before. Like, I can't. So I'm always just dissecting or interpreting or analyzing everything that I read. So that has been hugely impactful, because when you're just sort of always aware of what's going on under the surface, or maybe what you think is going on, you know, or why the author made this choice, it really changes how you write, or changes how I write. It changes how I approach starting something and what I think I want to get across and what I want to do, even if I don't know exactly what it is or exactly how to get there. Just sort of this point of departure for where I start with something and what I know I want to get out of it, that came from sort of that deep reading that got ingrained in me. And also I'll say meeting the other people in my programs was so, so impactful, because hearing their takes on things and offering them feedback and them giving me input on my writing was just hugely helpful. And it's like something that carries on to this day. Like, I still have my friends and we still swap work, and I absolutely would not be the writer I am without them. Like, 100% just would not be the same. It's just I think those two things were the biggest pieces of it. And along with all the, you know, of course, all the technical stuff. Those are almost the things.
Yeah, that, and that's something you can't replicate on your own.
Yeah, you can't replicate it, and you can't, like, once it's in there, like, you're not gonna get rid of it, you know. So I think those are sort of the most important things that I took.
What has writing taught you about yourself?
Oh my gosh. Oh man, what has writing taught me about myself? Oh gosh, lots of things. I guess it's sort of this mirror that you hold up, right? Or reflect. And sometimes when I'm writing and it's working, it's almost as if I'm not conscious of it almost, or things happen that surprise me, or a character does something or says something and I did like I didn't plan that. It's just almost like, I don't know. So it teaches me to be open to things like that, points where you're sort of guided by your intuition, or I don't want to get like woo-woo out there. I think it's all sort of your brain working in different ways that surprises you, but mm-hmm. I think it's interesting, and I try to pay attention to that.
Well, the subconscious is just, as a writer, I never realized how much the subconscious had control of it. I mean, there's certain things you think, oh yeah, I do this probably because I did this as a kid or whatever. Mm-hmm. But in writing, like, you're going, where did that come from? Sometimes you'll think about it and you go, oh, maybe this. Sometimes you can't have a clue where it came from.
Exactly. And it's so interesting. And sometimes if I would go back to a book that I read when I was a kid, like, I love Madeline L'Engle, and I was rereading, or for some reason I was at my mom's house and I picked up one of the books and I was reading it and I was like, oh, that's maybe where, that's maybe where that voice came from, or that's where maybe this, because it just sinks in so deeply. It's just interesting. I don't know. So yeah, it teaches me things like that. And then also teaches me that I tend to procrastinate sometimes, and that, like, you have to actually sit down and do it, and that you have to be really stubborn about it and not give up.
Isn't it funny? And someone told you like 20 years ago, one of the biggest problems you're going to have is when somebody says, get your butt in the chair.
Yeah.
Because you think that's the easy part. No, it's not. That is not the easy part.
It's not the easy part.
Often that's the hardest part. Are you reading anything right now?
I am right now rereading Lee Smith's Fair and Tender Ladies because I'm teaching it. And I am reading Love in the Archives by Eileen Vorbach Collins, which is a sort of a patchwork collection of essays about grief and loss, coincidentally enough. and then I just read a book that I picked up on a whim about dragons that I just like sat down and read. One of those like fun books.
Just because.
Just need because, an escape. I don't know. I needed an escape. Yeah, I guess sometimes it can turn to like sci-fi fantasy.
Do you have any advice for new writers?
Oh, advice for new writers. I do, actually. I would say to new writers, first of all, sort of just pay attention to everything around you, because you never know what's going to come up that you're going to use, whether it's an image. Every once in a while, I will see something, and just the way that that image strikes me, it's like, oh, I have to capture that, and you have to write it down. Or if it's a line of dialogue, or if it's something that happens to you, just pay attention and be aware of everything. Steal what you can from real life. Use those little nuggets and put them into fiction. Like, turn up the volume on it, you know, make it more interesting. But it often stems from that little nugget. And beyond that, I would say to read a lot and to read deeply and really think about what you're reading. Try to divine what the author intended with that. And then I would say find your people who understand your work. I think that's hugely important. Find the people who understand what you're trying to do and will help you lift your work to the higher version of what it wants to be, and not what they think it should be. And that could be tricky and that can take a long time. But once you find those people, do not let them go. keep up with them. Just keep writing. Just keep reading.
Thank you, Heather.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been delightful.
To learn more, visit heatherfrese.com.
If you're enjoying The Writing Table, please consider leaving us a review. There are so many podcasts out there. Reviews help other listeners find us. Thanks so much for your support.